Hi. Welcome to another episode of Paul Don Power, Power System Design's podcast on the latest in power and power design. I'm your host, Alex Pault, and today I've got Scott Brown of iWatt. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Alex. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're glad to have you. I understand you've got a new single-stage SSL driver.
That's great. Yes, actually, we have a couple of new products that we're in the process of releasing right now. They follow on from some non-dimmable devices we released early in the year, and we are now introducing our first dimmable single-stage SSL drivers.
Now, there's more than one device?
Correct, there's two. One is rated to 15 watts. And then we have another device that's actually rated to 8 watts that is intended and optimized for the needs of small form factor retrofit bulbs such as candle bulbs and the GU10 type.
Right. So we're talking beyond just trying to design into the Edison socket. You're really trying to create a device that'll drive LED lights in all the form factors.
That's true.
So now, tell me about these devices. Why a single-stage SSL driver chip?
Well, as you may well know, iWatt is best known for its high-performance two-stage products, and those devices are indeed very popular in the market today. And we will continue to invest in that area, for the best in low-flicker and high-performance two-stage devices are indeed excellent. But we've noticed that a significant portion of the market is looking for the lowest cost, and a single-stage solution is one way of reducing the BOM cost a little lower than where it would have been with a two-stage device.
Right. Now, obviously, you wouldn't be as proud of it if it didn't have functionalities that belied its price, I imagine.
Correct. I mean, as with all of our products, when we came to defining this device, it was important for us to find things that we could do that were different or better than was already available on the market.
Mm. Now, frankly, when it comes to LED drivers, the biggest issue I currently have is dimmable. Is a lot of LED drivers are trying to get a dimmable incandescent look, and they're just falling short. What do you have to offer the designer in that space?
Well, indeed, dimmer compatibility is a real challenge for everyone in this space. The wall dimmers, the track dimmers that are installed in a large number of homes were not designed with LED lighting in mind. And the LED driver has to take a phase-cut signal from all manner of different types of dimmer and convert that into a DC current. And it's not easy. You've got leading edge, you've got trailing edge, you've got electronic dimmers.
There might be a fan integrated into the fixture. There might be all kinds of things involved.
Who knows? So it's a difficult challenge. It's a difficult problem to solve. And one of the things that I was brought to the party with all of our dimmable devices is a unique way of sensing the dimmer type. And because of our digital technology, we're actually able to call up different algorithms that are best suited to the type of dimmer that is sensed that the bulb is being connected to.
So essentially you detect the type of dimmer circuit, and then you have a completely separate operating mode depending upon the type of dimmer detected.
Pretty much. And actually, this is something that not only enables us to get better performance than our analog competitors, it's something that we're proud to say we have a patent on.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, and as I was saying, dimming is so critical, because even some of the best bulbs out there that I've seen either dim through a limited range, or they have problems with complicated loads. Like I was saying, if you think about some of the light fixtures in households that have got fans integrated, you know, you've got motor noise to worry about. You've got some of the houses are very old. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if there were like variable resistors in the walls or something ridiculously antiquated for some of those dimmer circuits.
Well, yeah, and the other thing also is one thing to work with a dimmer. It's another thing to work well with that dimmer. One of the things that we're happy about with these latest products is, for example, the dimming range. So if you look at a lot of LED drivers, they may work well at full load when the dimmer's on fully, but you get down to 20%, certainly below 10%, the majority of LED drivers out there, they just turn off.
Mm.
So the light goes to zero.
Right. Well, I guess that would fall under like dead travel. There's a lot of dead travel in an LED light fixture when you think about some of the dimmers that are out there.
Correct. I mean, those two phenomena are indeed closely linked.
Now,
one of the things that Sorry to interrupt. One of the things that we're very proud of and happy with these new products is the ability to dim down to not just 10%, but actually all the way down to 1%.
Well, that's great. And I'm assuming that also works on the other way around. When you're coming up, you got a good pop on, and there's not a lot of popcorning. You know, you don't have a lot of the individual lights coming on one at a time. You've got a nice clean lighting also from the bottom up as opposed from the top down.
Correct. Yeah, you use that term popcorning. I love that term. It's so descriptive, but you're absolutely right. With a lot of LED drivers, if you start with the dimmer at its minimum level and start to slide it up, if you have multiple LEDs LED light bulbs on that circuit, you'll see them popping on at different moments as you're moving up that dimmer travel. And one of the things that we focused on, one of the many things we focused on with these products, is to ensure that they all turn on at exactly the same phase angle to help minimize, if not eliminate, that phenomena.
Although, you know, the engineering community is not known to be poetic, but that's one of the more poetic descriptions of bad behavior I've heard.
I totally agree. I think whoever came up with that one, it's extremely descriptive and slightly amusing.
There you go. Now let's go from one type of an allusion to popping to an allusion to explosions, the bomb, the BOM, bill of materials.
Okay.
Which, to some companies can be quite an explosion.
Well, indeed. Let's just come back to thermal management issues in a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
On the topic of bill of materials. Bear in mind, of course, that the whole reason for introducing a single-stage device was to help reduce the bill of materials. A significant portion of our efforts went into seeing what else we could do to further reduce the bill of materials beyond other single-stage devices, for example. One of the key things has been to replace the FET that drives the transformer with a bipolar, a BJT.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That helps to reduce a few cents from the bill of materials right there.
But it requires more special control.
It does. It's a little more difficult driving a BJT. One of the nice things about a digital approach is it's relatively easy to do difficult things sometimes. So we have a little digital algorithm that modulates and carefully controls the base current to ensure that we keep out of saturation and have an efficient, well-controlled BJT.
Excellent. So you reduced the BOM cost. Now, the other thing that affects the BOM, obviously, and you want to touch on it, and I want to touch on it as well, is thermal management, because obviously the thermal performance of a system is also tied to the cost of the parts.
Correct. So we've always believed that thermal management in a lighting environment is very important. So all of our higher-end products, and now with these lower-end products, we've also incorporated what we refer to as thermal derating. The lighting space is quite possibly the most difficult power supply environment you can imagine. One of the things that makes it particularly difficult is the form factor.
Mm-hmm.
When you're working a retrofit bulb, by definition, you have to fit into the form factor of whichever bulb it is you're looking to replace. So right away, you have a space constraint, which directly results in a potentially high power density situation.
With poor ventilation, almost certainly.
Well, that's the other thing, is having designed a bulb, you don't know where that bulb's going to be used.
Exactly.
It should be used in an environment that has great ventilation. It could be used somewhere where it's fully enclosed and it's hot, and it's going to get significantly warmer in that environment, perhaps catastrophically so.
This is a very good point, because you think about consumer environments in general. You design something for a consumer environment, and for all you know, the person's got a light fixture sitting directly under a dryer exhaust port or something.
Yeah. Yep. Indeed. Anything's possible.
So how do you handle thermals?
Well, we have this thing called thermal derating. So with these newer parts, for example, the engineer can determine which temperature threshold is acceptable for his implementation. And when the temperature is exceeded, our chip will automatically reduce the current being fed to the LEDs. So that should reduce the power being dissipated by those LEDs. It should help reduce the temperature in the system. And if necessary, the part will continue to reduce the current until the thermal situation is back under control. And in a worst-case environment, if there's something really bad going on and reducing the current isn't sufficient, ultimately our part will indeed turn it off completely in order to get back down to a controlled environment.
Well, a controlled shutdown is always better than an uncontrolled shutdown, and far better than thermal runaway.
Well, exactly. I mean, thermal runaway would be an utter disaster, and I totally agree. It's good to manage the situation, and more importantly, it's good to know that the components that you have designed into your system, onto your LED driver, aren't experiencing temperatures above which they're rated. Capacitors, for example, particularly electrolytic capacitors, are rated at 105 degrees, maybe 125 degrees, but certainly no higher than that. And it's important if you want to ensure that your product lives up to its claimed lifespan to keep the temperature, you know, at or below whatever the maximum rated temperature might be for all components on the board.
That's an excellent point, Scott. I mean, when you think about it, you can have a device that's effectively a third or who knows how much shorter lifespan from predicted just because of overseen thermal issue.
Well, the key word is what you just said, who knows? If you've got a capacitor that's rated to a maximum of 125 degrees, who knows what's going to happen if your system goes up to 150 degrees, for example.
Well, there you go. Now, Scott, what are the model numbers of these devices again?
There's the IW3608, that is the 15-watt device, and the IW3606, that is the 8-watt device.
And where can our audience go to get information on these?
Well, the iWatt website is always a good place to start. That would be www.iwatt.com.
Excellent. Is there anything else about the devices you wanted to leave our audience with before we closed out the episode?
I think those are the big ticket items. The real message here is that you can go and minimize the BOM cost without having to compromise either the dimming performance or the quality and longevity of your product.
Ooh, do you have a ballpark bulk price for these devices? We can give our audience an idea of exactly how inexpensive they are.
It's on the press release. It's in the ballpark of 50 cents, but I don't have that document in front of me.
Not a problem. We'll link to the, because we ran the press release on our site already. So we'll link to it on the page with this podcast, so our audience can find that info. And we'll also put a direct link to the iWatt page on the podcast page.
Well, much appreciated, Alex. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, Scott, frankly, the chase of the industry after the Edison socket has been very disappointing to me in LED development. But finally, devices are getting to the point where we can at least occupy the Edison socket and move beyond that. I think the industry's almost been in a state of coma waiting for the Edison socket to be populated. And now we can invent new luminaires instead of the other way around. But at least we have the technologies now that allow us to tackle the Edison socket with real product that actually performs the way we expect it to.
Yep, no, it's an exciting time in many respects.
You got that there, Scott. Well, I thank you very much for being with us, Scott. I'm glad. And we'll bring you back again in the near future to talk some more about solid-state lighting.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much indeed.
Oh, the pleasure's mine. And I'd like to thank everybody out there in the audience for taking the time to be with us. We wouldn't be here without you. Tell your friends. This is Alex Pault for Pault on Power. Have a great day.